Welcome to KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. We are on Twitter at KUOW. Thank you for tuning in. Republicans and Democrats are not opposites. We have this two-party system that makes them seem like opposites, but my next guests have so much in common. They're two women who've lived in Seattle for decades and now run the dominant political parties in our state. They're not communist revolutionaries. They're not anarchist militants. They are Susan Hutchison and Tina Podlodowski, R and D. Welcome to KUOW.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Good to see you both again. Am I right? You two are not night and day. You're more like late morning and early afternoon.
Well, we have a job to do, and yes. I like to say my job is to elect good Republicans to work with good Democrats to do good for the people of Washington State, and I hope that that's Tina's goal, too.
Yes, my job is to work with and elect great Democrats in Washington State, and of course, we want to make sure that we can all work together for the benefit of the people of Washington State.
Late morning and early afternoon, Snoqualmie and Clay Ellum—they're so close, and moderately different. So I invited both of you to come in and give us your different political takes. And I want to start with local elections, but we just had President Trump just a few minutes ago taking questions on North Korea. You know, he has gotten some criticism in some quarters for his fire and fury rhetoric. And this is what the president said just a little bit ago.
If anything, maybe that statement wasn't tough enough. And we're backed by 100% by our military. We're backed by everybody, and we're backed by many other leaders. And I noticed that many senators and others today came out very much in favor of what I said. But if anything, that statement may not be tough enough.
What would be tougher than fire and fury?
Well, you'll see. You'll see.
What would be tougher than fire and fury? You'll see. Susan, are you scared?
No, I'm not scared. I think that the president is doing the right thing. I like this new direction where we are saying strategic patience has come to an end.
That was the doctrine for years.
That's right. And that's come to an end. And I think there's nobody better to speak his language than Donald Trump. He's met his match.
Tina, talking a language that Kim Jong-un can understand?
You know, I'm, as with many things, I'm disappointed in Donald Trump and how he has handled a variety of situations, certainly one that could trigger a nuclear war here on our planet. But I'm also dismayed that he would continue to double down and triple down and quadruple down on these kinds of comments with somebody like Kim Jong-un, who's obviously an unstable leader. I think that shows unstable behavior on his part. And frankly, I'm also a little bit disgusted because it is the anniversary of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So not only is this, I think, poor foreign policy, but it's also an incredible poor taste given the time. So I wish he would just stop. I thought he was on vacation. 17 days
working vacation. Working vacation. Susan, the concern from some people is that when the president says, as he did today, he was asked about a preemptive strike, and he said, "We'll see," is that you don't want either side in a situation like this to think that it might be in the other's interest to strike first. You know that's crossing into too dangerous a territory. What's your take?
Well, as I've observed this administration, they've made it clear over and over again, they're not going to show their hand. But, you know, this is what the Korean regime has done for decades. They're extortionists. They basically need money. And so from time to time, they saber rattle. And administrations for years have delivered something to quiet them down. And so in that way, we know Donald Trump is not going to do that. He's not going to be extorted into taking taxpayer money and transferring it over to this very corrupt regime.
Well, let's talk about what's going on in Western Washington, your territories. In Seattle, Tina, whether it's Jenny Durkin and Carrie Moon or Nikita Oliver, what is the main thing Seattle voters are choosing between this November?
Oh, boy. I think, you know, that's it's an interesting question for the voters themselves in terms of what they're choosing. We know that they are choosing a woman for the first time since Bertha Knight Landis. So that's fantastic in making that happen. I always am quite dismayed when you see the lack of women in leadership roles, particularly in politics. I mean, if you take a look at Congress, for example, 535 members of Congress, 19% of them are women, 78 Democrats, I think it's 21 Republicans. If you look at CEOs in the Fortune 500, what is it, 6% are women. So I think they're looking for leadership. I think they're looking for someone to deal with some of the intractable issues here in Seattle, particularly when it comes to things like homelessness, but also working with the budget here in Seattle. You know, I'm a former Seattle City Council member. I think folks are looking to see what the city can do with the dollars that it has responsibly to make sure that we're dealing with the growth that we're seeing.
Do you take a side? Does the Democratic Party endorse?
No, we don't take a side in this. Both of the candidates have declared as Democrats in this race. It's nonpartisan in terms of how...
Though Nikita Oliver has her own party, right?
She does.
People's Party.
Yes, People's Party. But it looks like it's two Democrats all the way through, and we'll wait to see what happens. I'm looking forward to the debates.
Susan, let's start with what Tina said about the fact that there's going to be a woman who's the mayor of Seattle. Does that matter?
Well, if she's competent, it will be good for the people of Seattle. And I think that certainly Jenny Durkin has a long and distinguished career serving, and she seems to know what she's doing. We certainly need something in the city of Seattle. I've lived here for 37 years, and I'm just amazed at how much the city has changed. And from our point of view, and it's always good on KUOW for you all to hear what Republicans think, because they do make up half the state. We look at Seattle city government.
They make up half our guest list right now.
They do.
A full 50%, yes.
Congratulations. Uh-huh. I'm delighted to know that. Very good. Well, my husband, who's a Republican, listens to you religiously, so just know that you do have some listeners, too. But in the city of Seattle, you know, Republicans look at the city government as, you know, in a benign way, as kind of crazy. And other than that, is very dangerous, dangerous to the rule of law. And I think this recent income tax that the city has passed is an indicator of that. And so we worry. And one of the things that happens,
income tax. You brought up income tax. If Seattle's new income tax were to be upheld by the courts, you want Seattleites to refuse to pay it? Were you quoted correctly on that?
Well, I think that the law very clearly is unconstitutional. It's illegal, and it's been voted down 9 times by the people. So this law, as you look at it, you know that it is not some correction to the way we are taxed. There's nothing written in the law that would correct anything, like our huge sales tax, the highest in the country, or the property taxes that just keep escalating in this region.
Tina, why haven't supporters of an income tax in Seattle promised that if we get the progressive tax, then we'll lower the regressive taxes?
Well, because the city doesn't have the authority to do that. In fact, Republicans would actually have to open a discussion about our unfair and regressive tax system, the worst in the entire country here in the state of Washington. The reality is that poor people pay 7 times more of their income in taxes than the top 1% in the state of Washington. That's the discussion that Republicans are refusing to have. And it's not just about talking about income tax or trying to sound some alarm on income tax or get people scared about an income tax. We've been dependent upon property taxes, which disproportionately impacts both poor and middle-class homeowners. And the Republicans have been unwilling to talk about a whole host of other things, whether it is income tax, capital gains tax, something really reasonable that would hit the top components of earners here in the state of Washington. What we can do to lower B&O tax on small businesses, but at the same time have appropriate tax rates, and then also close the tax breaks on companies that have had them for years and no longer have them, and even things like carbon tax. So I do want to say that there's this interesting kind of sort of false morality that I believe that Republicans put out there in terms of, you know, we think it's crazy, we think it's nuts. What I think it's nuts is that we're not taking care of all Washingtonians and all Seattleites and looking at it through this lens.
Okay, Susan, any more to say about income taxes before other stuff?
Well, I just disagree with just about everything that Tina has said.
That's fair.
And including her conclusion that we're the most regressively taxed state in the nation. We, if you compare us to all the states in the nation per capita, we are 13th in the country, and all the folks who are ahead of us in that dubious list are your Northeast ultra-liberal, high-spending states. And so we as a Western state that's mostly agricultural as far as the land is concerned, are finding ourselves with, as I said, the highest sales tax in the country, skyrocketing property taxes, and constantly being taxed for every little thing imaginable, including our cars, which is the latest outrage among our voters.
Susan, you said what you had to say about a woman as mayor is that I hope she's competent. Does it, you and Tina, both women running big organizations, does it matter? Is there a different leadership style among men versus women? Does it matter whether Seattle has a woman? There's many women mayors across Western Washington. Does it matter?
Absolutely. And we love our Republican governors as well.
Yes.
Who are women. We think that they're doing a fantastic job. And we think that they have a great voice.
How are they
especially
different?
Reaching out to
how
young
women.
How
is a man or woman different in how they lead a big organization, do you think?
Well, you know, I am reticent to start a discussion along these lines because it's a minefield for everybody. So let me just say that I think that a woman can do anything. And I think especially this younger generation of women that we're seeing in the military have proven that they can be fighter pilots and can do amazing things requiring tremendous intelligence and skill.
What about transgender people in the military?
Well, you know, that's a decision the military is going to be making, I think, as time goes on.
Tina, the Republicans are barely hanging on to a majority in the state Senate. And in this election on the east side in the 45th district, the Democrat finished ahead of the Republican 51-42%. How would our lives change if that seat flipped Democrat and the Senate flipped Democrat?
So much better.
How would our lives change? What's thing number one that would change in our lives?
Well, I think that the lens through which the state Senate and the state House through would look at these issues and look at the is what's best for all the folks of the state of Washington. I mean,
and when they look through that lens, what changes? Yeah. What's one example?
Well, example in terms of looking at the poor in the state of Washington as well as the middle class, specifically in the state of Washington. If you look at what's happened in this particular budget and the Republicans refusing to pass the capital budget over a hissy fit, frankly, we have 20,000 jobs in the state of Washington that are currently on the line, $4 billion in capital projects over the Republicans refusing to do their job and get that particular budget passed, in fact, holding it hostage. I think what
it's two sides who are disagreeing, right?
So no, it's the Republicans versus Democrats in making it happen. If you look at that particular budget, if you look at that capital budget, it passed out of the House 92-1.
Okay.
So it's the Senate Republicans that are the problem here, and they are holding it up in making it happen. So let's talk at what would happen in this case in terms of not just adding a majority to the state Senate and adding someone like Monica Dingra, a tremendous thinker, a mom, somebody who's lived in their district for 20 years, who has a lot of care and concern in terms of the education system, as well as her experience in the criminal justice system, as well as her experience with domestic violence issues, for example. We will see more of that come through.
Okay. Yeah. And Susan, what would change? How would Jin Young Lee England, the Republican, overtake Monica Dingra by 10 points between now and November?
Well, let's talk about the changes that would occur if in fact she is defeated. That seat is held or was held by a Republican who died tragically last year, Andy Hill, a great leader in the legislature. It's being held right now by Dino Rossi, who was specially appointed. And Jin Young England is going to be the vote in the Senate that makes sure that we don't have a Seattle income tax spread throughout the state. And
let's be clear,
when
though,
Tina talks about a hissy fit.
I want to hear Susan finish, and then I want to hear.
Let's talk about who had the hissy fit.
Okay.
It was Governor Inslee when he went back on the deal that the Republicans and Democrats had made to bring an end to the session and reach a decision on the budget, which included the capital budget. And so he reneged on that deal by basically vetoing a jobs line item, which would have given fairness, speaking of fairness, to manufacturing firms.
Manufacturer tax exemption.
That's right, because Boeing and other large companies have it. And so this would help the smaller companies and, of course, would grow jobs in the state, manufacturing jobs. And so Governor Inslee broke that deal. It was unconscionable, and that was the hissy fit.
That was the hissy fit.
The hissy fit was Senator Joe Braun with less than 24
hours.
You know what? That
is John.
Yeah.
We're going to be in the weeds. We're going to lose. Right. We're going to leave many listeners behind because you know so much about this.
But let's
Susan
talk
brought
about
up
that.
Income tax. Susan right. said income tax happens if the state Senate goes
well,
Democrat.
That's ridiculous. And that's Susan fear-mongering again and again.
You
and again.
Just this made a speech about all the taxes we need to add when
no,
this
no, no.
state is bringing in revenues.
I made a speech about all the taxes that we need to look at to have tax fairness. It's very clear that we are the number one regressive tax state. I don't care
okay,
if you
most
are.
Most people don't know what the word regressive and progressive means. So let's just use the word fair. And
right.
Let's
and we are the most unfair.
This time we're letting
Tina. What's unfair to the people of this state.
Okay.
What's unfair to the people of this state is a tax system where we are bringing in huge revenues and we are spending them as fast as they come in.
Okay.
And
what's unfair is a tax system that doesn't
do... And then you think we need more taxes.
No,
right,
no, 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 no. Just let's be clear about this. What I think is that fair share in terms of tax payment, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of corporate tax breaks and loopholes that have not been looked at for decades that require us looking at that to see if it's fair.
Actually, they're
we
looked
have...
at by experts on the budget committee.
No, they're not.
Session
they
after
are not,
session.
They are never reviewed and they are
That's
never
absolutely not true.
That's
while
absolutely
the
true.
Me,
the way
me,
that is absolutely
a budget
true.
Funds education.
No.
While the committee's doing
your budget
the work.
Is not budgeted.
Microsoft just had one of their, in the last session, just had one of their tax breaks removed, and you know that. So let's,
pardon me. Pardon
Microsoft
me, behalf,
has paid $30 million
ahead,
in taxes
ahead,
as a corporation. That's it. $30 million off
go
billions
ahead,
and billions of revenues?
I'm calling
How
on,
is that fair?
I'm the teacher calling on someone else. On behalf of our listeners, Nathan has asked on KOW's Facebook page a question for both of you. Mm-hmm. Has there been any talk, as we're talking about our legislature, Nathan wants to know, has there been any talk of changing our legislative system from part-time to full-time? Nearly every year we have to go into special sessions to do the basic work like budgets. Should we have part-time or full-time legislature?
Well, I think in order to have a citizen legislature, you have to have part-time.
Part-time.
Because people have real jobs that
right.
they go back to. What's unfortunate is this governor so lacks leadership that he has had to continually, he can't get his party in line, and so he's had to continually add extra sessions.
Okay, blame the governor, stay part-time.
I blame the state Senate. I blame the states, the Republican-controlled state Senate that won't come to the table and actually do a deal that benefits from the folks of Washington.
Part-time, people full-time, that's Nathan's question.
Folks need to make a decision. If they want a citizen legislature, that's going to be part-time.
Okay.
But it's been very difficult, let's add that question, it's been very difficult for folks who have to be in their jobs year-round to be able to run for state legislature. So we have to have that conversation as well.
On Facebook, Yakov says, when will the Washington State Democrats ditch the undemocratic caucus for the presidential primary and join a more accessible primary vote-by-mail election that has a higher turnout and doesn't discriminate against the poor, non-English speakers, the disabled, the elderly, and the working class? Tina.
You know, that's exactly what's being debated by the Unity Commission at the DNC when it comes to looking at primaries versus caucuses nationwide. I anticipate that we'll hear the first of that work at the next DNC meeting in October and probably start the resolution towards that towards 2020 and the election cycle. What I'd like to see, though, is a fair election system where Republicans actually support postage-free ballots in Washington State, support the Washington State Voting Rights Act, support automatic voter registration, and same-day registration so everyone can vote in every election as opposed to this smokescreen over the presidential.
I just want to remind you that Tina ran for office last year against Kim Wyman, who is our Secretary of State and in charge of elections, who is considered, well, she's the most popular politician in the state, but besides that, she is considered absolutely above reproach. And I trust Kim's decisions on these many issues. And she has worked for fair elections continually during her entire service.
Susan,
as
do you,
an auditor and then as Secretary of State. Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with President Trump that was Washington one of those states where there was massive voter fraud? President Trump said that there were millions of illegals voting, and that's why he seemed to have lost the popular vote.
Well, I don't know where the voter fraud is, but we do know that all of our elections need to be cleaned up. We have a very mobile society. Those of us in Washington State, because people don't register by party. We spend a tremendous amount of time, both Democrats and Republicans, trying to figure out who our voters are. It's an important part of getting out the vote at election time. And so one of the biggest problems you run into is people move, and yet the ballot, because we're vote by mail, still shows up at somebody's mailbox. Mm-hmm. Because most people, it's the last thing they think of is to change their address for their voter registration.
I know where the voter fraud is. It is nowhere, and that's just a smokescreen dreamed up by Donald Trump and his henchman Chris Kobach.
Oh no, around it's been around quite a while.
No.
All we have to do is go back to 2004.
No. But you don't. But you don't.
Know Rossi's election as governor of this.
Not at all.
What do you think, Susan?
Not at all.
I keep hearing, seeing. Debunked is the word I keep saying. Study after study, there weren't millions of voter fraud. But what do you have, a position?
I just want to wait and see what the commission determines.
Okay.
And the commission is a bipartisan commission. They'll figure it out.
Okay. Cindy on Facebook says, I'd like to know how Ms. Hutchison can square her party values with the anti-Republican, meaning Trump, that they put in office. Is Trump a Republican right down the line? Do you agree with Trump right down the line?
Well, of course, I don't think there's any person who believes along with their candidate or their elected official on every single issue. You know, that's just the nature of politics. I just appreciate very much that Donald Trump is working to clean up the swamp of Washington, D.C., that he is strengthening our defense around the world, that he is working hard to create jobs, that our economy has turned around. There are all kinds of great things that he's accomplishing in this role, and I understand that Democrats don't like him. And I also understand that there are Republicans who think he is exactly the right person for the job.
Any word on that, Tina Podolsky?
There are so many alternative facts in that statement. I don't even know where to begin about Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is a disaster as a president. He's a disaster for our country. I cannot believe that that Susan was an early supporter of Trump and his particular policies. And look what's happening down the line, whether you're talking about election policy, whether you're talking about what's happening with foreign policy right now, whether you're talking about budget issues, whether you're talking about his ill-fated attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act without a plan in place. And in fact, the biggest part of that particular act was adding at least $7 million in tax breaks for each of the 400 richest Americans while taking away health care from 32 million people.
I just have to clarify. Yeah. An early supporter insinuates that I supported him before the primaries ended. I supported the nominee that our voters chose, and that was Donald Trump. And I was completely neutral as the party chairman until that time.
Okay.
He had so many candidates and so much different support within the party for these candidates.
Final question. How'd this go? Will you come back and talk with us again as news changes?
You mean we're out of time?
Yeah, we're out of time.
We need like 2 hours, I think. But we need a lot. We have a lot
I'll
to talk
back.
About.
How
I'll
about
come
you,
back.
Tina?
I'll absolutely come back. Thank
okay.
you, Susan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Susan Hutchison, Tina Podolsky, chair of the state Republican and Democratic parties. Thanks for coming into KUW. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Good to see you. More of The Record coming back. Now back to KUOW's The Record. On Twitter at KUOW, I'm Bill Radke. If the season ended today, the Seattle Mariners would make the playoffs for the first time since Apple invented the iPod. That was 16 years ago in 2001. No major league team has been denied the postseason for as long. But we have reached that familiar point in summer where, again, the Mariners are making a run. They're holding on to the second wildcard spot. Can they keep that? It's our job to ask. So let's ask Mariners fan Joe Vieira, columnist for Grand Salami magazine. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I know why your magazine's called Grand Salami, but you got to tell the newcomers.
Ah, yes, of course. The late, great Dave Niehaus, whenever a Mariner would hit a grand slam, it is Grand Salami time, so break out the rye bread and mustard.
Yes, yes, Grandma. Break out the rye bread and the mustard. We have been here before, though, right, about the Mariners, you know, if only the season were to end today. Hey, they have a chance. We've been here before. What's different this time, if anything?
What's different this time compared to, say, 2014 or 2016, where you still had Robinson Cano, Kyle Seager, Nelson Cruz in the heart of the order, is that this lineup is way deeper than it has been in the past. I would say it's probably the best they've had in the last decade or so. They added Gene Segura at shortstop in the offseason, Jerod Dyson from Kansas City to play center field. Ben Gamel from the Yankees has been a revelation this season. And when you add those kind of guys to your lineup, you can score a lot of runs, and you need to with the pitching staff they have.
That throw that Dyson hit at third base about a week or two ago, that was on par with the Ichiro Star Wars laser throw. That was something else.
It was incredible. The guy has a cannon for an arm and something like 25 stolen bases. I believe he leads the American League in stolen bases. And that's another thing that this team just hasn't had in the past. Speed on the base paths and an athletic outfield that can catch nearly anything hit their way.
I should clarify, I don't think that throw actually happened. I think I was dreaming it. I don't think it was possible, but, you know, that still. King Felix is hurt, though. A Cy Young Award winner, not playing, getting older. There are whispers that maybe having fans in yellow T-shirts waving the K cards at him, egging him on to bring the heat, maybe that's not the wisest move. Maybe he doesn't have the heat anymore. What do you think? Is it time to retire the King's Court?
I don't think you retire the King's Court as long as the King is here. I don't know if K cards are the right call anymore, though. If there were ways you could get people to chant for weak contact or a ground out to second base, that would
right.
be a nice way to go about it. It's been tough to watch Felix this year because you can see flashes of what he was, and there is still that potential for him to be a good starting pitcher, but he's just been struggling, and now you can see he's been hurt.
I hear you and some friends are getting an alternative going, an alternative to the King's Court.
You could call it an alternative in a way. An add-on's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So tonight, you will, if you go to Section 182 out in the left field bleachers, you will see the Maple Grove. That is our answer to the King's Court in a way, in honor of our Canadian, James Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
And this started, a couple of months ago during the Blue Jays series. And if you're not familiar with when the Blue Jays come to town, all of their fans from British Columbia and Alberta come down with them, and they take over the ballpark for a weekend.
My 7-year-old son could not figure out why this was a hostile crowd to the when the Mariners played the Blue Jays. Why is everybody rooting for Toronto? Because it was filled with Canadians. Go on.
Gosh, they swarm, don't they?
They do. He got a geography lesson. Go on.
Yes. So what happened was a bunch of us decided, well, we want to go to a Blue Jays game. Let's have some fun at a Blue Jays game and get like a group of seats together. And hey, our Canadian's pitching on Sunday. Let's cheer for our Canadian. And lo and behold, there's the Maple Grove with our answer to the K card, the A card, EH. So two strikes, we're chanting A.
Uh-huh. How's that sound? Can you do it for me?
Oh, of course. A, 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 A.
Guess that's about how I figured it would sound.
So we had a lot of fun that first time, and we've kept bringing it back, and it's really taken on a life of its own. We got to meet the man a couple weeks ago, and he seems to like the idea. He's got an A card up in his locker, so
nice,
a lot of fun.
Okay, finally, Joe, just bottom line, as I said at the top, the Mariners are making that run, that familiar run. They always fall short, or almost always. How are you feeling now? Where are you on the excitement scale?
Well, I'm the eternal optimist here, so I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to get into the wild card. And with that lineup and James Paxton or Felix on the mound, I think they can compete with anybody in one game to get beyond that.
A series gets a little trickier.
A series gets a little dicier with the pitching, but
it's
open.
Yeah, one thing at a time. Joe Vieira, who is a columnist for Grand Salami magazine, whose pages are stuck together by mustard mingling with rye bread. Good to talk with you, and good luck.
Thanks so much.
KUOW is The Record. We're going to be back in just a moment. Stay tuned. KUOW Seattle, I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for coming along today. I would rather face charging grizzly bears trying to kill me than politicians and university administrators, because it is over quickly. That quote is from Robert Wilgus, director of the Large Carnivore Conservation Lab at Washington State University and a person at the heart of Washington State's so-called war over wolves. Seattle Times environment reporter Linda Mapes wrote about that war. Hey again, Linda.
Good to see you, Bill.
Boy, you'd rather face charging grizzlies instead of politicians and university administrators. That sounds like things have not gone well between Robert Wilgus and politicians and administrators. He directs a state university lab. What's his issue?
Well, this is a pretty toxic situation. And I appreciated one of the comments from a reader on this story, which will be published in the paper on Sunday. It's just online now in the Times. But the reader said it's not a war over wolves. It's a war over cows.
Yeah, right.
And it's worth thinking about it that way, too. I mean, what this is about is grazing of cattle on public lands. And that is something that's been allowed in the Colville National Forest and others in Washington for 100 years. And, you know, this issue didn't start heating up for us until 2008, when wolves began naturally recolonizing the state. After they were reintroduced in Yellowstone National Park, they eventually started just walking into Washington from Idaho and also up in Canada. And so suddenly these ranching families that had been using these public grazing allotments in the national forests, whose grandparents had been part of the purge of wolves from the state, trapping, poisoning, killing them to get them off the land, to keep them away from their cattle and their sheep, suddenly these ranchers had wolves once again amid their livestock. And they don't like it. You know, they're, of course, as all of us, varied in their opinions. I've talked to ranchers over there who would really rather there not be any wolves. And I've talked to some local politicians over there who feel the same. I've talked to other ranchers who feel sorry for the pups, especially, and the wolves that have been gunned down by the state. And they can't understand why the state can't manage this better. One rancher said to me, can't they do this better? They're raising these wolves just to get them shot, you know? I think it's important to pull back and recognize, though, that amid all the controversy which we've been watching, when summer after summer the state of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is gunning down wolves, as they are this summer as well with the Smackout Pack, to protect livestock, that overall this is actually going, believe it or not, well. Wolves are growing in their population by 30% a year.
Wolves are growing where the cattle ain't, and meanwhile they're taking care of predators for ranchers?
Well, what's interesting is that mostly the cattle and the livestock get along fine. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of cows walking around out there and sheep that don't have any trouble with wolves, and they share the landscape without much incident.
Okay, let's get to the research of Robert Wilgus and why he would rather face a grizzly than a politician or a university administrator. Robert Wilgus published some research 15 years ago on how it's going, on the effect of hunting, in this case it was cougars originally, to control their populations. And what did he find?
That's what's so interesting about this conflict. If you want to understand it, you have to go way back to other animals and earlier years. You have to start with cougars. And way back in 2002, when this researcher, Robert Wilgus, began publishing a series of papers that looked at, well, what really happens if you kill cougars in order to protect livestock? And what he discovered was that actually you get more mayhem, not less.
How does that work?
It breaks up the social structure of their families. And so suddenly, instead of the status quo, you have these hooligan cougars out there freelancing around and taking on livestock and creating trouble that normally would have been kept in line by the bigger, older male cats.
But how, I don't get kept in line. I mean, the more predators there are, the more food they need to eat. So how could there possibly be more killing when there are fewer cougars?
It's not just a numbers game. It's a behavior game, too. So these packs, whether they're wolves or families of cougars, they have social structures and they have hierarchies. And it's not a free-for-all by any means. And if you understand that, you realize that if you randomly take out animals, you can be destroying an alpha male or the breeding female, or you can be liberating a younger cat to take a place of leadership, if you will, that it's not yet ready for.
And so are you saying this hunting could result in more sheep and cows being killed?
That's exactly
what
his
research
and discovered.
Okay, and the reaction to his research was what?
Depends. There were ranchers who were very upset by it, including one in particular. So this was Joel Kretz, who's now a lawmaker from the 7th District, which is way over in northeastern Washington, beautiful country. And interestingly, he was, before he was in the legislature, a cougar hunter. He was a contract cougar hunter for the state. And he, like other ranchers, believed that these predators were a problem, that they were attacking his horses, that they were attacking livestock. And if anything, the people in northeastern Washington, ranchers especially, wanted more hunting on cougars, not less. And the Fish and Wildlife Commission agreed and actually upped the hunt. And It was Robert Wilgus's research, in addition to that of others, that led to Governor Jay Inslee overturning that policy solely on the basis that upping the hunt wasn't scientifically sound. And that was very controversial for people who wanted exactly what got turned over, which was increased hunting of cougars. And so the conflict goes back to those two butting heads and others, and it morphed, not surprisingly, into the wolf conflict, because in 2014, the same researcher published a very highly rated and very, very controversial, interesting paper, which once again found counterintuitively that if you kill wolves in order to protect cattle, you can wind up getting more predation, more kills, because once again, you're disrupting a social hierarchy. Now, it's interesting that you look at cats and dogs, right? Cougars, wolves, and you come to a rather similar conclusion. But indeed, that's what he found. And that paper was written about by the New York Times. It was quite the big deal. And, you know, usually for a university, they're thrilled when one of their own hits it out of the park like that with a paper that really starts to make waves and get talked about and gets, you know, lots of hits on websites and, you know, written about by the national press. But in this case, it was actually a problem.
Yeah, let's get at that problem, because I can understand some ranchers disagreeing and contract hunters and politicians who represent them even. But how did university administrators get into this?
So here's the deal. The paper's published, and within 2 days, the lobbyists for Washington State University are emailing to the state director for WSU saying, hey, we've got a problem here. We're hearing that wolves and funding for the medical school are linked, and that to the extent that it continues to, quote unquote, go badly on wolves, there's not going to be a medical school. And
these are dominantly, I assume, Republican politicians saying, we don't like this research. We can withhold money. This is your research at WSU. Would you like a medical school?
Interesting.
Does it work like that?
Well, it did. I mean, we can see this for ourselves in the documents. I mean, I'm reading these emails. There's just no other way to see it.
Do Democratic politicians
hold
up projects based on university research, too?
Sure. And, you know, why would you be surprised to hear this, given that you were just on a show with the head of the Republican Party talking about gleefully holding up the entire Capitol budget because of a disagreement over the water decision. I mean, this happens all the time. It's what they do in Olympia. It's called leverage. No one should be shocked by this. But what is important is that university administrators draw the line and protect academic freedom. I mean, we all know that industry will always try to get influence wherever it can get it, whether it's in academia, wherever it can get it.
So did Washington State stop publicizing Robert Wilgus's research on hunting wolves?
Well, that's interesting. You know, they had a magazine story in preparation about his work, and it got killed. There was also a press release that was put together by their news office on subsequent cougar research, and it never got printed. And Wilgus several times was supposed to present his findings in committee before lawmakers, and those got canceled by lawmakers themselves because they wanted to, you know, keep down the temperature. And on it went like that.
Why didn't Wazoo protect its academic researcher?
Well, frustratingly for me, they didn't want to talk. There was a complaint filed by this researcher, actually by Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, PEER, which is a national whistleblower protection group that specializes in protecting the academic freedom of agency scientists, government scientists. And they, in April, filed a 12-page, very detailed complaint against WSU on behalf of Robert Wilgus, saying that they had suppressed his academic freedom and sought to silence and punish him because of his controversial research on behalf of lawmakers, political pressure, basically, in a nutshell. And so, because of that complaint, which was filed against WSU, they refused to talk to me and say whatever they have to say about this situation. Now, we know from some of the public records disclosure and some of the personnel file material that was released because of this lawsuit, we know some of what's going on, but I was not able to actually talk to them.
Is there a different way to look at it? Well, you're waiting to hear from WSU.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they have their side of the story. That's always the case. But reading the documents, it's very clear that there was a lot going on here in terms of trying to put a lid on what he had to say, put sideboards on his ability to say it, disallowing him to speak in his official role in public meetings, so on and so forth.
And meanwhile, finally, that researcher is out of work?
No. Interestingly, he actually got tenure during this process. Let's remember that is a different process. That's actually really more by faculty peers all over the world very often. So he actually got tenure in the middle of all this, which, by the way, is one of the reasons he went public again last March after going into a deep silence after a very big controversy last summer. And in March, he came out to reveal some more of his lab's findings and got into a whole new round of trouble with the university over that.
Robert Wilgus's story and the story of cattle and sheep and wolves and cougars, it's coming out in the print version of the Seattle Times this weekend, Sunday. It's online now. Linda Mapes is an environment reporter for the Times, and we're tweeting out a link to her story at KUOW. Always good to see you, Linda. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill.
More of KUOW's The Record, What's Worth Fearing? We'll talk about that with a couple of comedians, of course, coming up. KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. Are you scared yet? North Korea may have figured out how to put a nuke on a missile that can reach Seattle. President Trump says he'll rain fire and fury if they keep threatening us, which they immediately did. They threatened the U.S. territory of Guam. And if you're thinking, well, better Guam than us, first of all, what's wrong with you? Second, maybe check the news. President Trump just upped the ante again, saying his previous threat of retaliation maybe wasn't tough enough. And a former CIA head, Michael Hayden, among other analysts, have said that Seattle is probably the place North Korea wants to hit. There you go. Happy Thursday. Despite the threat of war, Seattle Theater, the Rendezvous, is refusing to cancel this weekend's comedy show. By headliner Dwayne Kennedy. Welcome, Dwayne.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Good to meet you. You could have stayed home in Chicago.
I started to.
You thought about
after
it.
That news. Maybe I'll go back.
But you came here in solidarity with the West Coast, so thank you for your service.
Well, I didn't know that they were talking about hitting Seattle first.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sorry to break that to you.
Yeah, wish I had found that out a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but thanks, Bill.
Hopefully the flight change fee is not too dear.
No.
Performing with Dwayne, our buddy Hari Kondabolu.
Hey, Bill.
Good to see you again. You used to live in Seattle, but it sounds like you couldn't stay away at a time like this.
Oh, boy. Wait, so the goal is to hit Seattle? Is that right?
So we've been told that Seattle would be a juicy target. Big population, lots of military bases especially, joint bases.
Would Portland get hit too?
Well, it's
worth it, Bill.
Is that right?
I think it might be worth it.
Okay, to sort of suppress our neighbor.
As long as we're not in it by ourselves and there's some good that comes out of it, then I'm all about it, Bill.
Gotcha.
And don't the Mariners have a chance to make the playoffs?
If the season ended today, which...
If the world ended today, the Mariners
would be in the playoffs for the first time in 16 years.
Okay.
So, again.
The upside to nuclear incineration.
Yes. It's all about pros and cons.
Yeah.
So I asked a congressman from Washington on the Armed Services Committee, Adam Smith, how do you think this North Korea threat plays out? And he described what he foresees.
For a very extended period of time, perhaps even decades, we have a standoff. And I see it playing off as sort of a smaller version of the Cold War, that North Korea will not attack us and we will not attack them because the cost would be too high for either party to do that.
Dwayne, you remember the Cold War.
Yeah, it was chilly.
Yeah, it was.
Chilly, Bill.
It was. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Does this feel like the 80s to you?
This feels like a hot Cold War.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This seems like more of an imminent threat.
Yeah.
Do you know? Because, I you got two goofballs who could blow up the world.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think Kim Jong is trying to. I don't know what he's trying to do. What's the point, Bill? Why all the bluster? Why Guam?
Why Guam?
What did they do?
Question. Apparently, he wants to sort of rain missiles around Guam in a display that he can do it.
Okay, so some practice annihilation,
if you will.
Hey.
Do you remember? Speaking of the Cold War, just to compare threat levels, perhaps you remember this song from Sting's first album. We share the same bond.
remember that one?
Regardless of ideology, hear me when I say to you, I hope the Russians love their children too.
And that was terrifying at that time, that Sting was taking himself that seriously.
That song's terrifying now, but
yeah, it still does, right?
Right.
Hari, more scary, less scary? How are you feeling?
Well, I was, when the Cold War was happening, I was six
or
seven at the time. And I remember we had shelter drills where they would have us hide under our desk or go into the hall away from glass.
Mm-hmm.
And even at six or seven, I realized that that was a worthless activity.
Yeah.
That other than missing a few minutes of class, you know, we were going to die. So I'm glad that we're not going into that, like the fake, like, oh, let's try to protect ourselves by hiding under our desks business.
Right.
However, I don't like our current tactic of egging on the maniac with the nuclear weapons. I'm not sure if that's the best approach to this. And that's what's frightening, because unlike the 80s, we didn't have someone egging on the Soviet Union. We'll do it.
There was a little evil empire talk, as I recall.
That's the response of a cat that watches a lot of television. Mm-hmm. We will rain down fire and fury. Hey, who are you, Loki? What are you talking about? We will untold that the world has never seen. You're Bane? What are you talking about?
Like, it felt like, is Stan Lee their scriptwriter? Right. Who writes, who says things like that?
Fire and fury. One of James Taylor's least popular songs. Never gets requests for that one. And now he says that maybe, well, fire and fury, they were saying, well, was that too tough?
If anything, that statement may not be tough enough.
What would be tougher than fire and fury?
Well, you'll see. You'll see.
What would be tougher than fire and fury?
Does he have a spaceship to Mars ready to go? Like, why is he saying, does he plan to leave before all of this happens? Because he does realize that we're all in trouble. It's not just, you know, Guam and Seattle. Like, the world is in trouble.
Right. Right.
Did you know that it's against the law for Washington State to have a nuclear attack evacuation plan?
No, why?
What kind of a law is that?
Yes. It was decades ago. Some lawmaker decided that, you know, that would just make us, that would send the wrong message. We'd be planning for for a nuclear war, and so we still don't really have a plan.
Really?
But as you're saying, Hari, some plans are fraudulent anyway.
Right. The plan is regardless of what's on paper, the plan is going to be screaming, yelling, praying. Mm-hmm. And all sorts of other nefarious activities because it's almost over. I really don't think there's much you can do with the nuclear. I mean, am I wrong? Is there a nuclear bomb shelter? Is there a way to survive?
Under the desk, brother. Duck and cover.
Duck and cover.
Yeah, yeah. I'm under that desk.
Yeah, you should be good.
Yeah. Just drag a desk around with you.
Wherever you go.
As long as you have a desk.
Yeah.
FEMA has a nuclear blast fact sheet. They do. It says, first of all, stay underground if possible. If not, number one.
Did they try to make it all cute? Nuclear disaster. It's a blast.
No, they played it pretty straight. They did say have a desk if possible. Okay. But if not, if you don't have a desk, it says, do not look at the flash or fireball. It can blind you. First piece of advice.
Right.
I'm reading straight from it. It can blind you. Take cover behind anything that might offer protection, such as depressions, behind berms or ridges, or in mines and caves that engineers have declared usable for that purpose.
That's funny. That's the first time depression would have been a useful survival tactic.
Yes.
I'll stand behind Hari. He's depressed all the time.
And finally, avoid places that channel wind. I didn't know this. For example, under overpasses or in subway entrances, they make blast waves more intense, like a wind tunnel.
Huh.
Don't go there.
That's a lot of places to be or not to be in case of nuclear disaster.
Yes.
So essentially, just stay at the crib until things blow up or blow over.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
If you could advise Trump on this one, what would you tell him? You're an advisor. You're part of the greatest team ever assembled.
I would say stop being president.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get out of office and let a more subdued maniac take over.
Who would you prefer?
Who would I prefer to be president?
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer, if the choice was Trump or Hillary, mm-hmm. if those were the choices, then mm-hmm. I would have preferred Hillary.
Oh.
I think she is a more statesman, would be a more statesmanlike threat to the world.
a more statesmanlike threat to the world.
I mean, the egging on of a right. nuclear power, come on, try it. I'd like to see you do it. Right, right. Like that, I have a feeling, right. and this is, no one else would have said that.
Right.
No. No one.
Knock this warhead off my shoulder. I dare you.
It is a miniaturized warhead. Did you hear that? That they've in order to get on a missile, it's miniaturized.
It's like a Zika warhead.
Yeah, it's possibly, maybe it's tiny little warhead.
You know.
So what does that mean? How far can it reach?
I've seen various perimeter lines. I've looked at this. There's your right around North Korea. There's your Japan. There's your Hawaii. There's your Seattle is in the path of totality.
You said it could reach Chicago.
Yeah, and then there's like a wider out. It gets maybe less accurate at that point.
But on a
Chicago
positive
is
side,
possible.
You know, nuclear disaster would slow down gentrification.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nobody's brought that up yet.
No, not one person.
Not one person.
Total of one.
Right. Yeah. I can't believe how much value my property has lost since it was incinerated.
You guys are in the liberal bubble this weekend at the Rendezvous. Do you play red state clubs?
I do.
Yeah.
I do one-nighters in Michigan.
Yeah. How does that go?
Great.
Yeah.
You know,
are you challenging them? What's your approach?
I challenge them till they stop laughing, and then it's on with the banjo jokes. No. Who likes Merle Haggard? You know. Challenge over. I'm trying to live and eat.
Closing down the challenging portion of our set tonight.
Right, right, right. But generally, you know, man, like, you know, who would tell this? It's all in the rendering. You can say anything you want to say to people. It's just in the rendering. And I'm not a person that, you're so stupid because you think this, and you know, even that's, if you even think that. And at this point for me, and I tell people this, it's not even politics, because Donald Trump is such an extreme case. And I say, you know, he's just a lunatic. And even people who voted for him think, oh yeah, this cat's a lunatic. Uh-huh. And they laugh because they know it's true.
Right.
So I have not too much problems. Yeah, playing red states.
Hurry, same.
I have a few more problems. No, but I mean, what's your problem? I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, like, I have really strong opinions, and then they express themselves on stage. It's very clear how I feel, but I think the goal is for me to find some common ground with whoever the audience is. So even if there's some disagreement, hopefully I can still make them laugh. Because at the end of the day, it's like, even if they don't like the point of view, if they like me, it's like, I don't like that point of view, but I like him and I understand why he feels that way. And I feel like to get to that level where they're invested in the performer more than anything else is the big goal, I think, of all shows. So
yeah. Oh, I'll tell you this now. Speaking of which, I did a show at St. Charles, Illinois. You know, Illinois was blue, but not everybody in Illinois is blue. Mm-hmm. And I was doing jokes about Trump. And I didn't realize, because sometimes from the stage, you know, you can't see everybody in the audience.
Yep.
And they had to escort people out. And from what they told me after the show was that these two women that they escorted out, like, gave me the Nazi salute on the way out.
Oof.
And then some people were out. I think 12 people demanded their money back. People were out in the lobby crying. You know, so mission accomplished is my point.
In other words, Seattle, you're going to like these shows. That's what that means.
Who do they think they were coming to see?
I don't think they knew. You know, sometimes people, they just go to a comedy club.
Yeah, sure.
And they don't know what it is they're going to hear, or they can't imagine what it is they're going to hear, or, you know. So it was, one was like, man, this cat is, you know. And one of, actually, last week at a club in Chicago, there was this cat in the front row who was a Marine, and he was not enjoying me at all. You know,
how was he letting you know?
Through his glares of death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was staring at me as if he were North Korea and I was Guam.
Uh-huh. You looked like Guam to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we just have a minute left. Hurry, how do you do that? How do you get people on your side? Why would I like you if I disagree with the rant you are bringing down on my head?
Because we're all people, you know? We all have generally the same kinds of issues and things that we worry about on a day-to-day, and you have to find that common ground. And also, we're all sharing a room right now. Sometimes I just like to talk to the audience and get to know who they are. And
roommates.
Yeah, we're sharing the space. We better figure out how to make it work for the next hour. You know, sometimes it doesn't work, but you do the best you can, and, you know, there is always a way. And if there's not a way, just get the check and run.
Right.
So
find out. Sorry, I couldn't change your minds. Hope the check clears. Take care.
Find out for yourself at the Rendezvous. Is it tonight through Saturday?
Yes, tonight through Saturday.
All right. Dwayne Kennedy, Hurry Kondabolu. Thanks to you both for coming in. We appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Should we go out? Do we have any more Sting to go out on? Let's see. Let's see if I can.
Any
songs
about North Korea?
I could probably sing it myself.
Like they care for their children as much as the Russians. I don't know.
The Russians do. Oh, Sting. He was with the Police one album before that. And then it's.
And then it went in a completely different direction.
It's KUW's The Record. Thanks, fellas.
Thank you.